Time for Choke Point.
Let's go.
Brought to you by Primary Residential Mortgage. The fighting over vaccine mandates and snow removal got most of the attention this week as the Department of Transportation Secretary Roger Millar spoke to the legislature, but he addressed other key issues too, like where has the commute gone in these pandemic times? Chris, tell us about that.
Yeah, we usually see a dip in commuting, obviously, over the holidays, but it usually springs right back after the first of the year, and it didn't happen this year. And I've been saying for a week now that it's been way lighter on the freeways, like today. I mean, you don't normally see it this light on a Thursday morning. You know, kids are home, remote learning, parents are at home struggling with daycare closures or positive testing kids, people still working from home, people still getting sick, so there's still a lot of reason for why people aren't out there. But over the last 2 years, Secretary Roger Millar, the head of the Washington State Department of Transportation, says the number of the cars on the road is now getting back toward pre-pandemic levels, but it's not there yet.
The total number of cars and trucks and buses and the like out on the street is down 5 to 10%, but it's at different times of day, and we need to understand that better.
Now, for those of you that are out there on the road now, just go down memory lane with me and see if you can remember what it was like pre-COVID. Our Puget Sound area commute would start around 5:30, with drivers coming up from Thurston County, up the Valley Freeway from Sumner. By 6:30, we would see bumper-to-bumper conditions on northbound 167, northbound I-5 from Federal Way, northbound 405 out of Renton, southbound 5 and 405 out of the Everett area. The southbound 405 express toll lanes would usually hit the maximum $10 by 6:45 daily coming out of Linwood. Our travel times were routine, and that was with no accidents. And the morning commute would kind of extend some days till about 11 a.m. So where are we now?
What we've seen to date is the morning commute is way down. The afternoon commute is kind of where it was.
Millar says it's the midday traffic that is experiencing congestion like it hasn't before.
People who can work at home are working at home. And then in the middle of the day, they go out and take a car trip. So what we're seeing, rather than this morning peak, afternoon peak, we're seeing a gradual increase until dinner time, and then it drops off.
So 2 years into the pandemic, our traffic patterns really have changed. Now, will they ever return to normal? No one really ever knows yet. I mean, it depends on how things go. The other message Millar hammered home to the legislature is that they need real funding for transportation. While the legislature has been focusing on pet priorities, it has failed to fund transportation adequately. The state should be spending nearly $2 billion on preservation and maintenance every year. That's just the minimum to keep our roads and bridges in good repair. The legislature hasn't even come close to that.
We have a shortfall that has risen to $966 million a year. And that number is going to continue to go up unless we do something about it.
Millar says the state paves about 750 lane miles a year. 3,500 lane miles are due. Another 4,200 lane miles are past due. 18 bridges need replacement. There is still, of course, a massive multi-billion-dollar transportation package lurking in the background that comes with the gas tax increases, carbon fees, and things like that. But it's not likely that that's going to get done during this short session.
What about the big federal infrastructure bill? Don't we got a cut of that?
Oh, yeah, certainly. And they're going to get about about $1 billion, maybe, or more. I've got the details on that because I looked at the supplemental budget and got a report on that earlier in the week. But yeah, a lot of that is going to, in the governor's transportation supplemental budget, no increased taxes unless you consider the carbon fees and things like that. Mm-hmm. But get no gas tax increase. But a lot of that is because they're getting a lot of money from the federal government, certainly. But that's just a supplemental budget. The long-term one that they want to pass, that 18 billion dollar one, does include a lot more money for preservation and maintenance.
Okay, but if it turns out that this drop in traffic is permanent, maybe it's worth stalling the additional, building additional lanes and maintaining what we've got.
Yeah, well, that's the key. I mean, I could totally see we've got to catch up on the maintenance. I mean, they're $1 billion behind every year in what they need to do. I mean, again, my pet on this is always look at the Ship Canal Bridge. I mean, how much TLC does that need? I mean, seriously, who really likes driving over that bridge if you have a car with decent shocks? No one. I mean, so yeah, I mean, we're way behind on that in addition to all the stuff that they want to build, things that are also necessary. But yeah, everyone's been spending most of their time thinking about other priorities in the legislature. And I mean, the ferries are way behind in spending and what they need to do there. And so, yeah, they're way behind. And of course, that will most likely come with an increase at the pump.
By the way, there is a beautiful stretch of pavement through JBLM, which I drove for the first
time. Oh, isn't that awesome?
Going down to Portland a couple weeks ago. I couldn't believe I was still in Washington State. I said, what's this?
It's beautiful. I told you that stretch, and that also has helped with the congestion. That's a beautiful stretch of roadway now. And it's they're going to keep working down towards DuPont and starting next year.
But so we know it is possible. I mean, the Ship Canal Bridge one day could feel like that, right?
Oh, boy, that would be something, wouldn't it? A nice, smooth ride. Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, that's they did a good job on that spot through JBLM.
Outdoor fun with a deeper purpose. Cairo News Radio's Heather Bosch has our charity of the month.
It's called Mission Outdoors.
We specialize in planting seeds of hope in the lives of our veteran heroes.
Ryan Elwell says they do that by putting together events for service members and veterans.
It could be a fishing trip. It could be going to a Seahawks game. It could be learning how to wrap a rod. We do archery events, all kinds of different things.
And because when you face deployment, time with loved ones is limited.
We offer our experience for the whole family. We ask them to bring their kids, their dog, their parents, whoever they want to bring and spend time with.
Elwell says the activities are fun and serve another significant purpose.
They come out to these events, and through that, we build friendship and we earn the right to give them a hand.
Connecting veterans and service members with a vast number of resources.
Career counseling, marital counseling. Maybe they just need some new friends, a new hobby, something to do with their spouse, something to do with their kids.
He says he doesn't know exactly how many active duty veterans and family members he's helped since 2017, perhaps thousands. But what he gets back, he says, is tenfold.
I help a veteran, and it's really just a huge shot in the arm to see them on a better trajectory and to want to do that again and get better at it and create more opportunities to plant those seeds of hope.
Heather Bosch, Cairo News Radio.
I'll eat my sourdough any day. We're revisiting a story for today's Daily Dose of Kindness, brought to you by Heritage Homecraft. It's about how the game of chess is teaching a valuable life lesson to kids. CBS's Jamie Yukis has the update.
Mm-hmm. That's the best way to play.
Can you master life by playing a game?
Yeah, very good. I'm glad.
Damon Fletcher thinks so. He created Train of Thought, a program that brings chess to kids from some of LA's toughest neighborhoods.
There are just so many children that stand to gain so much from the game of chess.
Fletcher says chess saved his life as a teen, so he now uses it to teach life lessons to players like 12-year-old Andre.
I really wanted to do this interview because I wanted thousands of people to see the big impact that chess has had on my life.
After their story aired in September, donations poured in, enough to provide every student a set to take home. And allow Fletcher to expand his reach to hundreds of thousands of students across the states and overseas.
They're all incredible.
Including training chess coaches virtually in Switzerland and Uganda.
That's been a dream of mine, to be able to have an impact globally.
What lessons do you want people to take away from you and your story?
You've got to find a way to achieve your goal despite all the obstacles that your opponent is going to throw in the way. I'm a knight. Knights in chess do not let obstacles stand in their way, no matter what. He's going to find a way.
And if he can't find a way, he'll make one. Jamie Yukis, CBS News, Los Angeles.
7:48, and now from the Gene Ursula Show, which will have Mayor Bruce Harrell as their guest this morning. Here's G. Scott. And I hear that you have a strategy for dealing with inflation as someone who has some pretty intense experience with having to cut corners.
I don't know where you heard that from as far as strategy, but I will tell you, look, as someone who used to feel these pains just 10 years ago, there really is no strategy, because people with low income feel this rise in inflation before a lot of those that don't. And let's be real. You start talking about a 49.6% increase in gasoline. Let's just talk about that right there at the pump. Now, there, when you go to the gas station, when a lot of people go to the gas station, they might say, oh, my goodness, gas is high. And they fill up the tank. There's some of us used to go to the gas tank, or maybe you do go to the gas tank and you say, oh, my goodness, gas is high. OK, let me make my life decisions right here. What do I have to do this week? OK, excuse me, sir, ma'am. Can I have $9 on number 3?
Mm-hmm.
Decisions like that or when you, or you say, okay, sorry, we can't go too many places on the weekend because gas is too high. So when inflation hits like this, and then gas prices are up right now, you have car rentals. If you go out of town right now, 36% increase in car rentals. Oh, you need a family car? Oh, used cars right now, 37.3% increase in used cars. So again, what breaks my heart about the rise in inflation is the amount of people that it impacts right away, the amount of families that feel this right away. And I know this because, again, I just too was recently in that situation where you have to make and get real decisions on these things. Oh, you can get this, but you have to cut out that. That's the heartbreaking part of it.
Yeah. It really is. And I think it's just starting to catch up to like middle and higher income people now, too, where it's like the lower income and those who are used to the struggle. They're like, OK, we saw this coming months ago because we already felt it. And now, you know, all of the tantrum throwing middle income people are going, but I want my coffee I always get. And it's so expensive. I just go back to like my college days where my rule was I don't buy anything that's over $2 and I make it work, you know, like make recipes out of things that are already cheap. Like, you know. Know the routine, go back to it. We know it's temporary, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a temporary. I'm tired of, I look at all of the weary people in the grocery stores and at the drug stores, and they're the ones stocking the shelves and having people come up to them and go, you know, where's my shampoo I need? And they're tired and they feel abused. We got to check ourselves in that way.
Well, the one thing that can't be measured, right, and this is something that I talk about all the time, is food insecurity that happens here in this country and here locally. And the part about the food insecurity are, here's the sweet spot, and this is what happens a lot. Maybe you make enough money to where you're not on government assistance, right? You or your husband or your significant other, you're paying your bills as much as possible. You got all of these things. You got child care going on, your car insurance, all of those things. But for some reason, there's like this amount where you say, okay, we're going to budget $200 or $300 a month for groceries for a family of four.
And a month.
What I'm saying is you have a lot of people that are really struggling. They have jobs, right? They have housing and all of those things. They're just really struggling when it comes to food. So they're making rice more during the week, or they're making beans more during the week. And oh, by the way, nobody wants to go and stand in those food lines, right? Look, it's 2022. People have phones. Nobody wants to be recorded. I can't, the whole food line, like, hey, come on here. We got some, come stand in the line and we'll give you some bread and food and all that stuff. No. People need, give them gift cards so then they can go shop how they want to shop with some dignity when they go to the grocery store, just like everyone else. So again, when we're talking about inflation, we're talking about food insecurity that we already had a problem with. And then you have the increase of 18.6% with beef, 10% increase in chicken, 15% increase in pork. Again, there's some of us that can go to the grocery store. No problem. Oh,
no
my
problem.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Well, Lois, I can't believe the last time I was here, it was $30 cheaper. Ha ha ha. Have a nice day.
Perhaps a behavior change could be if you still have a depression era grandparent awake, ask them for some recipes, right? Like, we have resources available to us. We just have to get outside of our comfort zone and realize that we are not going to be comfortable in this pandemic. And so it's time to change, right? Like, we all thought it was going to end. I remember in March 2020, like, we'll be wearing masks for a few weeks. We'll be fine.
Right.
A year later. Oh, good. The light is at the end of the tunnel. 2 years later. Woo, this feels a lot like 2022. Okay. Time to start changing now. It's time to take your heels out of the sand and get walking.
You know, Colleen, you made a good point about having that grandparent that's still around, that knows what it's like to struggle and be financially strapped.
And still happy, by the way. And still happy.
Because I'm going to tell you, it's hard, though. Because sometimes there's some people that have been working the entire time, and all of a sudden this pandemic hit, and this is probably the first time that they've had to worry about finances. And if you've never been broke before, and this is your first time you're being broke, maybe in your 40s or 50s, I 1,000% feel for you. Because, well, gee, what do you mean? You got to know how to be. Yeah. There's kind of a science to knowing how to be broke.
Yes. You know what right? I mean? Like it's, the $2 rule.
What?
And the, you know?
Absolutely. Wait a minute. Don't pay that bill all the way. Call them first and say, hey, what can I give you right now?
Yeah.
And then can we get on a payment plan? Like, oh, I paid all my bills up right up front. Hold on. You got to hold on. Cash is king.
I know you love those Triscuits, but if they're $2.25 and not $2, you can't have them.
Man, you better get you some regular crackers.
Generic Triscuits.
Hey, Dave Ross, you better get you some of them saltines, baby. Get you some of them saltines.
I've hey, already got freeze-dried packages of them just standing by.
And if you want a dessert at night, saltine crackers with some ketchup. I've done it. Come
Dijon
on, baby.
Dijon is also a nice
topper. Yes, it is.
A bottle I've had for 10 years now.
Fabulous. I feel like Dijon is even fancy in pandemic times.
More
Let's
advice
talk about
on how to be happy when broke from G and Ursula coming up at 9. Along with Mayor Bruce Harrell on Cairo News Radio. Thank you, G.
Seattle's Morning News. This is Dave Ross with Colin O'Brien and Chris Sullivan. Tax season is going to be here soon. Can you feel the anticipation? And this is going to be an especially complicated one, it looks like. So let's go to our tax whisperer, accountant Don DeSantis at Clifton Larson Allen. We've talked a number of times, Don, about the understaffing at the IRS, and based on the memo you sent me, it's worse than ever. So what can taxpayers expect if they, for example, need to contact the IRS with a problem?
Well, contacting the IRS with a problem is going to be a problem. There was an article that just came out in the Washington Post the other day that said last year only 9% of the people could get through via telephone, and only 3% of the people who had questions about Form 1040. And I can say from personal experience the last year or so, I've called the IRS and I've been on hold for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour, and then sometimes it just clicks you off and you're gone.
Don't you get a special number as a tax accountant, by the way?
Exactly. We have what's called the practitioner hotline.
Yeah.
So it's a number that's not available to the public. And even with the practitioner hotline, you know, we can't get through.
Is there any real prospect of beefing up the audit staff? And I understand people hate to be audited, but the amount of money left on the table from people who could afford to pay and who legally owe taxes is breathtaking and tends to raise taxes for everybody else. So what are the prospects of actually hiring more people to enforce the law?
Well, there has been some positive steps from the IRS standpoint there. Throughout the last decade, their budget's been cut about 20%, and the number of staff has been falling. Just recently, there's been, I think, about a 14% increase in the last IRS budget. And, you know, there's proposals sitting in Congress right now. They're kind of sitting right now. They're not moving. But there are proposals to vastly increase IRS staffing.
Okay. Now, the Child Tax Credit, which was one of the more popular IRS programs, is apparently coming to an end, and that's going to complicate taxes for some people. Explain that, if you can.
Well, that's an interesting one. The Child Tax Credit has been around for about 20 years, but in 2018, the amount was bumped from like $1,000 per child to $2,000 per child. But then what happened last year, they really beefed up this Child Tax Credit. So now it applies to kids under 18, not kids under 17. The credit has gone from $2,000 per child to $3,000. And if the child is under age 6, it's gone to $3,600. So it's a pretty dramatic increase. And there was another really interesting thing that was done in that law. And that is, instead of waiting till the end of the year and claiming the credit on your tax return, the IRS was instructed, starting in July of 2021, to go out and make an estimate of what taxpayers were going to qualify for with this credit, and then to start sending them monthly checks for 50% of the credit.
Right. So people suddenly found themselves with an unexpected check, which they didn't object to. But you're telling me that in some cases, they may have to pay some of it back?
Well, these checks were just an estimate. The IRS looked back at 2020 returns or 2019 returns, depending on what the last year was that the taxpayer had filed, and they based the checks on those estimates. Well, there's income phase-outs for this credit. And the formula in and of itself is very confusing. For the first $2,000, there's one formula per child. For the next $1,000 or $1,600 if the child's under 6, there's a different income phase out. Whatever that is, it's like a reconciliation on your 2021 tax return. And it turns out that maybe you qualify for more and you're going to get a larger credit on your tax return, which will be refundable. But on the other hand, it could turn out the IRS sent you too much money and you've got to pay it back.
Wow. Well, that'd be an unpleasant surprise. Now, any other surprises? I know that the, of course, Build Back Better is still up in the air. I'm not sure if there are any tax consequences to that, but are there any issues that still have to be resolved before April?
Well, I don't think there's any big issues. Well, I understand the Build Back Better proposal has some tax ramifications in there. One of them is hiring more auditors. But I think as far as the 2021 season, the IRS, you know, we've got everything we need to move forward. However, because of the staffing problems, because of COVID issues, the IRS has had the biggest backlog they've ever had in tax returns. Again, I'm referring to an article I saw in the Washington Post that said at the end of the last tax filing season, last fall, the IRS had 35 million unprocessed returns.
Yikes. So they just took people's word for it that they paid the right amount or deserved a refund?
Well, no, these are returns that literally haven't been processed yet.
Not even processed.
Now, if you go back to when COVID first hit in the spring of 2020, the IRS closed all their service centers for like 3 or 4 months. And in the summer of 2020, I spoke with someone who had some inside knowledge. This is not a story that I read on the internet. This was a person who knew. They said that the IRS service centers had semi-trucks parked in the parking lot filled with thousands of tax returns in them. They hadn't been processed. And they've been working through this backlog, but in a typical year, the IRS might have 6-7 million unprocessed returns at any given point in time, not 30 million unprocessed tax returns. And the biggest problem is paper returns.
Yeah.
If they're electronic returns, the IRS can handle those fairly well. It's the paper returns that are the big problem area. And since most amended returns, for example, you can change your return, right? You can amend it if you find you made a mistake.
Yeah.
And most amended returns are filed in paper. Those things have been just like almost a nightmare. I mean, we filed for a client an amended return, and it took 9 months and about 8 phone calls for them to get their refund.
Yikes. Well, that tells me get it right the first time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Don DeSantis from Clifton Larson Allen, our tax whisperer. Don, thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to the show's podcast. We're happy you're here.
And you can keep up with the show and find some of the stories from today online at MyNorthWest.com.